Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
It was seen as a historical alliance, the son of the late Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos teaming up with the daughter of the highly popular but controversial president Rodrigo Duterte. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. for president and Sara Duterte Carpio for vice ran an unbeatable campaign, clinching the election with a landslide victory. But just 2 years later, the political marriage is starting to crumble. It has even degenerated into a war of words, with both Marcos Jr. and Duterte Sr. trading accusations, from calling the other lazy and uncompassionate to publicly floating the idea of a military coup. There were threats to use force to crush any secession attempts. And perhaps most shockingly, the two accused each other of being drug addicts.
When I was the mayor of Davao City, the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency showed me a list. Your name, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., was on it.
Well, I think it's the fentanyl. I hope his doctors take better care of him.
How did this political feud start? Why now? And what might happen next?
Next year, the Philippines will have midterm elections, and by 2028, the Philippines will have presidential elections. And so this fracturing of the Marcos Duterte alliance is very crucial because it may unravel the strength of this political marriage.
I'm Rahina De Luna, here to talk about Asia. I sat down with Lucio Blanco Pitlo III, research fellow at the Asia-Pacific Pathways to Progress Foundation, to find out more. So, Lucio, let's start from the beginning. When they announced this political partnership that Marcos and Duterte's daughter would team up, that seemed like an unlikely pairing. So could you perhaps explain what are the political benefits for each side by teaming up?
It's actually one of the most powerful political alliances ever formed in Philippine political history. So it's a marriage of one of the most powerful political clans in Luzon, in the northern part of the country, especially in far northern Luzon, the Ilocos-speaking region, the bailiwick or stronghold of the Marcos family. And of course, from the south, Mindanao, the second largest island. And so the Duterte clan from that island, who also, of course, have a lot of support from the Visayas, or the central group of islands. So essentially, it's like being able to win the majority local population in these areas, in northern Luzon, the Visayas, and Mindanao. So it's a very powerful combination of two political dynasties.
So each side had one part as their stronghold, and so by combining them, they can basically take on the whole.
Agree. So the formula is for Duterte to be able to make headway in Luzon, to which, of course, she's not as popular, but she is popular in the Visayas and Mindanao, where Marcos Jr. is not as popular. So by combining their political bases, they're able to amass a very strong core. And from that, they were able to get a lot of votes from all of these critical regions.
But now it seems like this political alliance is fraying, maybe even some say disintegrating. So what's behind this apparent feud between the two sides?
Well, I would think there are several issues, notable of which is one, the foreign policy, you know, the how to deal with China. I think it's one of the falling out between the current president, Marcos Jr., and of course his predecessor, the father of his vice president, Rodrigo Duterte. They have different approaches on how to deal with China, the country's big neighbor and largest trade partner. The second is the issue of the drug war that was one of the signature campaigns of the former Duterte administration, which the current Marcos Jr. administration seems unenthusiastic to follow.
We have tried to learn from the lessons that we saw in the experience of President Duterte in his war on drugs. And I think one of the main lessons is that His emphasis was on enforcement. And in our analysis, enforcement only gets you so far.
And of course, how to work with the International Criminal Court. Of course, under the former Duterte government, Philippines withdrew from the ICC. And of course, there are concerns right now that Marcos Jr. might be pressured, whether domestically or by international forces, to rejoin the ICC. And of course, if that happens, then any stumbling block for ICC inquiry over the excesses or abuses of the drug war under the previous government, it may pave the way for an investigation. And if the proceedings rule that several former Philippine government officials were indeed culpable of committing crimes, prescribed under the ICC, then they might be arrested by ICC and that the Philippine government would be compelled to cooperate. So that is a concern.
So the ICC issue, though, is very much a personal issue for Duterte then, because it very much involves him and his previous administration.
Yeah, I mean, so it's one of his flagship campaigns. He became very controversial because of that.
I will kill you if you do drugs in my city and destroy the youth building. I will kill you.
But even before, taken back when he was mayor of Davao, his policy towards the drug lords, drug dealers, is already known. And it's actually one reason why he became very popular across the country because of his approach towards, law and order. Another point, the Marcos Duterte, the fragmentation of this once very strong unity or political alliance was on the matter of constitutional change. Both administrations have proposed, to change the constitution. Former President Duterte proposed that the form of government of the country be transformed into a federal form of government. And this is actually one of his platforms when he ran back in 2016. And of course, we all know it did not pan out well. And now the current Marcos Jr. administration also wants to amend the constitution, but would want to focus, at least officially, they would want to zero in on the economic provisions, especially removing restrictions on foreign ownership, foreign capital, so that the country will be able to attract more foreign investment. But the approach by which this is being carried out, namely in the so-called People's Initiative, which is essentially, as critics argue, it's essentially a congressional initiative. And so some analysts look at it as a potential risk because the change in the constitution may go beyond what is stated, which is economic provisions. And they worry that some of those proposing or advancing this cause might actually have selfish motives behind it, which is, of course, to try to prolong their term in office or maybe change the form of government from presidential to parliamentary. And of course, if that happens, the current Speaker of the House, the cousin of the President, Martin Romualdez, might be able to position himself as the Prime Minister. And, as long as the majority in the lower house, which is about over 300 members, as long as they will be able to sustain that, then he may actually be in power for longer than what is being prescribed under the 1987 Constitution presidential system of the Philippines, which is the president is only entitled for 6 years, one term. You can only be president once. No chance for re-election.
I have asked the leaders of both houses, and again, some of the best constitutional minds that we have in the Philippines, to come up with a simpler solution that does not cause so much controversy.
So to sum it up, the dispute on this issue seems to be on the Marcos side. They're saying that this is to advance the economy, promote investment into the country. But Duterte camp accuse Marcos of trying to prolong his term in office. In terms of the timing, why is it now being, because it's always long been rumored that there's some kind of rivalry or feud going on in the background, but now it seems to have been laid bare in public. There's it's coming to a head. There's been a war of words. What's driving this?
I would say, of course, in terms of the foreign policy, we see that since last year, Marcos administration took a different course. Maybe there was expectation before that there will be a sense of continuity in terms of, how to deal with China, how to handle the issue of the West Philippine Sea or the South China Sea, which is, of course, one of the enduring challenge for the Philippines, both on the security and also on the diplomatic front. the spate of untoward sea incidents, you know, in the South China Sea since last year, starting with lasers, you know, water cannons, run-ins, collisions.
The nearest reefs that PLA have started to show interest in are approaching, have come closer and closer to the Philippine coastline. And the nearest one is now around 60 nautical miles from the nearest Philippine coast. And this is an evolving situation.
And so I think people are becoming wary about what more can happen and the risk for the Philippines and its relations with its largest trade partner. And Mindanao is, of course, a very important player for the Philippine economy. It's the home of the largest agricultural plantations. It's home of the largest mines in the country. And one of the primary buyers, one of the major markets of those commodities is China. And so I wouldn't be surprised if some of the leaders in Mindanao express concern about potentially losing out in terms of market access, in terms of maybe lower demand for their goods because of potential fallout of this brewing diplomatic crisis over the South China Sea. So Duterte, coming from Davao region, which is, you know, the epicenter of the tropical fruit export industry of the country, from pineapples to bananas to durians, of course, the minerals, you know. So again, perhaps, you know, some leaders of Mindanao convey to him their worries or concerns about potential economic impact to their sector if this goes out of hand.
So you partially explained my next question, actually, is the history behind their individual stance. So Duterte's pro-China stance and Marcos's more pro-U.S. stance. So perhaps you can explain, why is Marcos siding with the U.S. more?
Well, the Marcos family was exiled in the U.S. in Hawaii when his father, Marcos Sr., was deposed.
When Ferdinand Marcos stepped off the plane at Hickam Air Force Base, he was a man without a country, cast adrift in a hostile world, desperately searching for an outstretched hand after fleeing a country he once ruled with an iron fist.
So he spent years there. He studied in the U.S. also. So I would say that this may have played a lot in terms of him developing positive views about the U.S.
We continue to look to the United States for that continuing partnership and the maintenance of peace in our region. We have always considered the United States our partner, our ally, and our friend.
And one of his sons is studying in Australia. So in terms of having a more, I would say, positive views of the West, Marcos has it. Duterte, we know, yes, his personal views.
Hardliner Rodrigo Duterte has warned Barack Obama not to question him over a surge in drug-related killings since Duterte took office 2 months ago.
I am a president of a sovereign state, and we have long ceased to be a colony. I do not have any master except the Filipino people.
He, under his term, never went to any Western capital. Did not go to the U.S., did not go to Australia, did not go to Europe during his 6 years as president of the Philippines. And so the country's relations with the U.S. Suffered in a way, especially, you know, in terms of military defense engagement.
Your Honors, in this venue, I announce my separation from the United States.
And so this is a contrast in terms of how they look at long-standing alliances and partners of the Philippines from the Western camp.
Got it. So this dispute, and as it's growing, what does this mean then for the future of politics in the country? And specifically, how will this affect Marcos' ambitious economic plans for the country?
Yeah, so next year, the Philippines will have midterm elections. And by 2028, the Philippines will have presidential elections. And so this fracturing of the Marcos Duterte alliance is very crucial because it may unravel the strength of this political marriage. And this may not bode well for the Marcos Jr. administrations. If the current government wants to have a majority in the Senate and in the House, they need to have all the support that, you know, they can get in order to pass critical, urgent priority bills of the administration. And Mindanao, the Visayas area, is vote-rich areas of the country. But from the Duterte side, We also saw that his recent calls to separate Mindanao in his reaction to the People's Initiative, the move to change the constitution, he said that there's nothing fundamentally flawed with the current 1987 constitution to warrant charter change. So he opposed that and also the approach. And he said that if the government persists, then he would support moves to separate Mindanao from the rest of the country, which, of course, the security sector, many people in government, even leaders from Mindanao and the Visayas, did not support. We see some lawmakers, some local officials from Visayas in Mindanao speaking out against the separation of Mindanao. So there might be, you know, fragmentation of Duterte's alliances with other families in Mindanao, which may not bode well if Sara Duterte Carpio would aspire for the highest position in the land by 2028.
But it seems like, early polls suggest that she is ahead of Marcos Jr. What are the chances of her succeeding Marcos Jr.?
Well, of course, it's very important that between now and 2028, that she will be able to weather these political challenges and, of course, be seen as an inclusive leader. So this fragmentation of the Marcos Duterte alliance, this fraying of ties between two major political families in the Philippines may not be good for her bid for the highest post in the land. So I think this is why she's trying to keep ties with President Marcos and, of course, the sister of the president, Aimee Marcos, which also have differences in views with her brother. And so the more alliances that Sara Duterte can create and keep is better. And this would strengthen her hand.
Okay, I want to wrap this up by asking you, given his continuing popularity, what are the chances of Duterte Sr. coming back? Because he has threatened to in the past, or is that just a tough talk?
Yeah, so we don't know how serious it is, but he might decide to run as a senator for next year and perhaps, you know, to challenge the policies of the current Marcos Jr. government. But if that happens, you know, that will add more fireworks. It may not bode well for the image of the Philippines, you know, especially, you know, in these challenging times, whether in South China Sea or whether in great power competition. So the more the Philippines looks divided at home, then we will not be able to position ourselves to meet the challenges of the times. You know, recover from the pandemic of 2.5 years, trying to revive our economy, trying to get capital from both the West and the East, trying to compete with our neighbors in ASEAN, especially like Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, which is, of course, steaming ahead. So it's very important that we project a sense of unity because, you know, it will send signals to investors, domestic and foreign.
Whether Rodrigo Duterte is actually serious about the secession of Mindanao is not yet clear. But a senior Philippine military officer told the Post that any trouble in Mindanao would benefit the Philippines' neighbor in the north, China, because, quote, the Philippine government would in a way be distracted. I'm Rahina De Luna. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.